You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at SB Nation's Fear the Sword. On today's show, I'm joined by the wonderful Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. We're both recording this at Glens Arena, so if you hear some stuff getting torn down in the back, that is what you're hearing. But Greg, thanks for coming on.
I've been introduced many times, but never have I been introduced as wonderful, so thank you for that. I appreciate the lie.
Look, not a lie. This is a facts only, hashtag facts only podcast, but the Cavs in this game were not wonderful, at least in the second half of this game. Play the San Antonio Spurs, a good team that's missing Kawhi Leonard, so their LeBron stopper, their best player is not there, but they lose 110-94, had a really strong first half, and then fell apart in the second half. We're down, going a 7-0, 9-0 run, I believe the Spurs went on to start the fourth quarter. Cavs never really come back, have moments where it looks like they're going to, for instance, a Kyle Korver 3, bringing it within 8, but then the Spurs followed up by hitting a 3 to put it back with just minutes to go. It's 4:20. This is the breakdown of this. 4:48. Korver hits a 3, cuts it to 8. The queue is getting loud again. You see the people maybe buying it a little bit more. 4:25. Patty Mills hits another 3. Jordan Clarkson in this possession is doubling down on LaMarcus Aldridge, who the Cavs are trying to defend with Jeff Green. And he doubles. He can't recover well enough. And the footwork was just off, and his timing was off. And Patty Mills daggers the 3. Greg, we're going to cover a bunch of different things here. But to start, what was your just general observation of this game for the Cavs? What went wrong for them in the second half?
Well, the final score doesn't indicate the game completely. When you look at a 16-point swing, I mean, the Cavs are up by 3 at halftime. With the exception of their backcourt and Chetty not being able to hit shots, they were playing pretty well. Defensively, I thought they were pretty good. And then things kind of got away in the fourth. When you look at Ty Lue, kind of had a questionable roster decision. You had Tristan Thompson that was having a big game. He had 13 rebounds, I believe 10 at halftime. Larry Nance was giving you some really good minutes. And then at the end, he goes with Jeff Green as a center. And his reasoning for that after the game was he needed somebody who could score a little bit. And, you know, Jeff Green's a fine player, but he's not like, you know, Kevin Love out there, that he's pure offense.
Well, and a note of that, this happened in the Wizards game this week, this happened in this game. When he goes out to the three-point line, guys do not follow.
No.
He hit a corner three in this game, but this is a guy who is not a good three-point shooter. He is at his best. He's an okay post-up guy. That he's been okay at that this year. Don't love doing that with him a lot, but he's best when he's cutting and he's dunking and he's giving you that and getting to the free throw. And he's not a guy that should be taking threes. And looking a bit ahead, this is the kind of thing that I think when you have to make the tough roster choices, that liability for him to me, even though he's really useful as the small ball four right now, I think that's like the limitation of him when you get to the playoffs, where like you look at the cracks of this rotation, that's where I think he becomes, there's an issue with what he actually gives you.
Yeah, and you know, I think the problem with that, with Lugo and him in the fourth was, well, defensively you were pretty good for 3 quarters, and then the fourth quarter you gave up 34. And, you know, Larry Nance, you can make an argument that he is one of, if not the best defender on this team, with everything that he helps out with his ability to switch on multiple positions, with his ability, you know, at 6'9", you know, he's big enough now to guard most centers in the NBA. So you took him off the floor, you took Tristan off the floor, who was having a pretty good game. I know LaMarcus Aldridge was getting to the free throw line, but his shooting wasn't great in the first half. And you kind of went with Green, and then you gave up 34 points. And I understand you want to score, but you only scored 20 points in the fourth quarter and gave up 34. So, again, this was a close game until about the fourth. I think at the end of the third and fourth, San Antonio went a 12-0 run, kind of blew things open. Like you said, there was moments with a big Korver 3. It was getting close, and you could kind of feel the crowd and anticipation getting louder. But, you know, at the end, I felt like missed shots and kind of a poor questionable rotation was ultimately why they lost this game.
We're going to get to Lue in a second, but looking, I think just running through some of the guys' nights will tell you a lot. So LeBron, 14 of 25, only went to the line 4 times, which was something that he, I don't know, I couldn't really hear what he had to say post-game, to be honest, but I know Thompson wasn't thrilled with it. Maybe not where the point was going to get fined for, but what had kind of talked about that a little bit. But looking at the rest of the guys on this roster, so Jetty Osman, 1-6, 0-2 from 3. Tristan Thompson, 3-7, missed at least one bunny, if I'm not mistaken. George Hill, 1-7, 0-2 from 3. J.R. Smith, 1-8, 0-6 from 3. And then you go to the bench. Larry Nance, okay, 1-1, fine. Not a shooter. Jeff Green, 6-9. That's where I think his value, like, I think when you look back at this game, he at least did that, and that really mattered. His 14 points mattered.
5 of 6 when you take away threes. He was 5 of 6.
Yeah, very good. He's very good inside the paint. Great point there. Jordan Clarkson, 7 of 14, 3-7 from 3, hit 3 threes in the third quarter, kept them in it, missed a couple shots late, but that's what Jordan Clarkson is. Very kind of a downhill, one-directional guy. I tweeted this during the game. He's not great at looking for shooters, and I think that's a thing they're kind of figuring out here. It's a thing that's really impacting Kyle Korver, I think, and we're going to talk about that as well. But Calderon didn't shoot in his minute. John Holland took a shot and missed it. Rodney Hood, an invisible 28 minutes, 2 of 6. And Kyle Korver, 2 of 7, missed a technical free throw, rimmed it in that, in 2 of 7 from 3, missed, you know, a top of the three head, some amount. He just looks like he's out of rhythm right now. But when you add that up, they shoot 23.5% from 3, 41.8% from the field. The Spurs didn't shoot that much better overall from the field, a lot better from 3, but... And also went the line, I mean, a lot more times. 32 attempts from the line for the Spurs, 14 for the Cavs. Just not enough output for the Cavs. And they got the shots, and Clarkson talked about post-game, just those shots will fall when they're better. And I think the Cavs want to believe that. George Hill's probably going to make those open corner threes that he missed in this game and whatnot. But
George Hill kind of looks like he's aiming his shot a little bit, and he's not just letting it fly. The one shot he did hit today, it was off an offensive rebound, and he, like, stuck a hand up and, like, tapped it in. So if you take that away, he missed every single shot from outside the paint. And J.R. Smith was terrible, too. And we'll talk about him more, but 1 of 8. And it was kind of weird because in the beginning of the game, he passed up a wide-open 3. And, you know, obviously J.R.
Weirdest thing to me. Like, that's right. The tone for the night. Like, he had a wide-open 3. I think the arena was anticipating.
Right.
The arena, like, gasped when he passed this ball.
Yes.
It was like, why did J.R. pass this to Jetty?
Yes. And we all know J.R. likes to be contested when he shoots. That's, you know, he likes taking tough shots. But when you are that wide open, and he was passing, he was trying to pass up a good shot for his great shot. But the problem with that is he was more open than the guy he passed it to. The defender only made a slight recovery back to him. He was wide open, and he should have took that. And I feel like J.R. is such a confident shooter that, I mean, we've seen him have a couple big games here after the trade where, you know, he's had big first quarters. He'll hit his first 2, 3, 4 three-point shots. And what does that tell you about his confidence to start this game when he passes up a wide-open three? If he hits that shot, it could be a completely different game for him.
And he's been more engaged recently as well. I think that's worth noting. To move on to Ty Lue. The fourth quarter, I understand the logic of what he's going for there with playing Jeff Green. I think that, you know, he has a tendency to double down on offense when the Cavs get behind and are in a position where they have to mount some sort of comeback or play in a close game. He leans on his offensive lineups. That's why I think Clarkson's in over Hill. And I think he rides the hot hand too. And I think that all sort of coalesces into what you saw. And after that, the bad start to the fourth quarter. With the Nance at center, LeBron comes in for Nance. They play small effectively the rest of the way. I understand the going with Green first. I don't hate that move to start. I also think it's a move that if you have someone that's better than Jeff Green at that role, like if you just have someone that can hit a three like a Marvin Williams or just someone that's like a little bit more stretchy, maybe that looks a little bit better. Or in a dream world like Paul George, but when should? If you think he should have, when should he have gone back to Thompson or Nance? And do you have one that you would have rather have like the song seen go back in the game?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I think it's criminal that Larry Nance got 15 minutes tonight. I think that's terrible. I get caught watching Larry Nance like just on the defensive end with all the things that he does, disrupting the passing lanes, challenging shots without fouling. There was one, it was either the end of a quarter or end of the half, he contested a spur, and it was a wonderful contest, and he ended up banking it in. And he kind of threw his hands up like, what am I supposed to do? Because he's so good at challenging without fouling, with doing all these good things on the defensive end that, you know, don't necessarily show up in the box score. Plus, he was putting up 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and he was very efficient. He only took one shot, and he made it. Like, he's a smart player. Would you like to see him score a little bit more? Probably. Would you like to see him shoot threes? Sure, definitely. But the fact that he just helps you in so many areas, offensively, defensively, there was a couple times he was running the fast break. He personally ran it and turned it into a couple assists. He's so talented overall that I think getting 15 minutes where Tristan gets 23, Jeff Green gets 21, I feel like that's way too low for him. And he had the Cavs' best plus minus of the night of any of their rotation guys. He was -1, so he was almost dead even. When you look at guys like Thompson, who was -10, Green, who was -10, even LeBron was -8, Nance was -1. And in 15 minutes, I thought he gave him 15 really good minutes. I would have finished with him. There's an argument that he could be starting. I don't care as much about that.
We're going to get to that.
And we're going to get to that. But I would have liked to see him finish the game instead of Jeff Green. And I thought his minute count overall was way too low in this game.
I agree that I think you have to make a sub. I think the first couple minutes, I honestly probably would have played Hill as well. I trust the vet there. I trust the guy who has the 7-foot wingspan that can contain those point guards. I think you saw the limitations of Korver a little bit in dealing with some of these guys, even though I think he does smart basketball things. Maybe the 2-point guard thing that they used a little bit in the second quarter would have been something to go back to. I think there's an argument that I think Nance or Thompson, whichever one you want to pick, should have been back in this game. I think Tristan had one of his best games in a while. I know he did the raw rebounding numbers were lower in the second half, but I thought he did a very, very good job defending LaMarcus Aldridge. So LaMarcus Aldridge is a very good player.
Yes.
For 9-20 for him is 27 points is a good net, but Thompson hounded him on the boards, forced him into several bad misses throughout this game. Nance did as well, but did as well as you could want him to against a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus is not a sexy modern NBA player because he doesn't shoot threes and he is not like an elite rim protector, but he has this game that the Spurs maximize really well, that the Spurs emphasize. The Cavs' defense went into disarray when they tried to double him in the post. When they were able to keep Thompson or Nance on him, and I think Thompson more so, they didn't have to. They sent some doubles when he got cooking a little bit, but they did not have to do it right away and then open up shooters for a Spurs team that moves the ball really well, that has the system, that has guys like Patty Mills and DeJounte Murray and Bryn Forbes there to cook you on the outside, and Danny Green, who was excellent in this game. When Thompson and Nance were in there, you could do that. Jeff Green, God love him, should not be asked. That's putting him in a position to fail.
And that's not
asking
his fault.
Him to defend LaMarcus Aldridge. Right. In my mind, it is putting him in a position to fail when you're telling Jeff Green, hey, go body LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes. And this is a Spurs team that, you know, they LaMarcus is a power forward, but his size in today's NBA, he's the size of a center. Mm-hmm. And Pau Gasol is the size of a center. So you had some size problems going in. You knew that. LeBron James had to guard Pau Gasol for stretches and did a pretty good job for the most part. But with Aldridge, holding him to 9-20, when he is the focal point of this offense now that Kawhi Leonard's out, I thought it was pretty good. Now, he got to the free throw line 10 times, and LeBron got there 4. I don't know how much we want to talk about that. But 9-20 is pretty good. And, you know, you take away the fourth quarter where, like you said, Jeff Green was asked to guard him. They had to help. I felt that kind of threw everything else off, and that kind of helped lead to that 34 points. In the fourth quarter that the Spurs scored, Danny Green was amazing. 5 of 9 on threes. It seemed like if he even got a sliver of space, he was hitting a shot. They would fast break. He would just pull up on a dime and hit a three. So he was huge for him too. So that was kind of the difference, was San Antonio had 2 guys that were keeping them alive offensively while other guys contributed. No one really outside of LeBron did that. Jordan Clarkson finished with 17. He had a couple big threes, but a lot of that just came in one stretch in the third. After him, you know, you look at the starting lineup combined outside LeBron scored 14 points. That can't happen. Now, that won't happen once Kevin Love gets back and, you know, Chetty Osman and George Hill and J.R. Smith were particularly bad on this night, and they won't be that bad. Tristan, I think 6 points on 3 of 7 is about the best you could get, maybe a little bit better efficiency.
If he ever could develop that little floater, like, and that was a consistent thing for him, I think people would perceive him so much differently.
Yes.
I will say I tweeted, alluded to this, I guess, and I gotta stop referencing my tweets because tweets are stupid and fickle, but I think they really miss Kevin Love.
Like, yes.
I think you see it so much, and I think if you're someone out there tweeting, and I saw this, and I had people send me tweets about this, I think it's crazy to think that he doesn't fit in this team. I think he's super valuable in this team. I think he fits really well with Nance. I think you could start him at the beginning of the fourth quarter and maybe have to pull him out midway through to get him a rest before the stretch run. But right. I think he fits. He would solve some of the issues. You could ask him to do stuff in that beginning of those fourth quarters. That would be really valuable and maybe somewhat prevents that gaping 9-0 run that the Spurs go on before LeBron comes back. And LeBron was only out like a minute 50 to start the fourth. And it just went from like a two-point game to I'm gonna check my facts here. It went from a two-point game, 76-74, to when LeBron is back at 9:54, the Spurs had beat up the Cavs 9-0 to start the thing. And then by 9:21, it's 13. And LeBron didn't solve these issues, but he's in a hole coming back, and that's hard. And even if they're playing faster, and the Cavs, I think sometimes when they play faster, they get a little bit out of control. I think that's
contributed to there's so many new bodies. There's so many. Times where they're running the fast break, guys don't exactly know where to be, and that'll come with time.
This is like the natural, I think, result of new guys that no longer have the adrenaline rush of the new guy-ness that they had in Boston, had in OKC, and then post All-Star break, still one or two practices since I think the All-Star break, at least public stuff, and then they've practiced tomorrow. So, I mean, again, remember, teams don't practice that much in the NBA. I think high school teams practice.
Especially not this time of year.
Yeah, especially right now, especially with a more veteran-oriented team with a coach like Lou.
According to Isaiah Thomas, this team never practices. So.
Remember that. Real quick, before we go on to some more secondary points, and you'll hear from Tristan Thompson as well. You'll hear his scrum from the Cavs locker room. Real quick on Thompson and Nance. Both, I thought, had effective nights. I think it's sort of silly to debate the binary one guy is better than the other. I get the allure of starting Nance, and we're gonna touch on that a little bit after our quick little Thompson break. But you know, I think this is the type of night, if you get this type of night from both guys, you're in a better off position. And I think that's sort of, if you can have these guys play like this, rebound, have them battle on the offensive glass, have them do all this different stuff that and defend well, there's minutes for both of them. There's a need for both of them, and I think debating that one guy should play and one guy should be sent to the moon is a silly thing to do.
There's a role on this team for both of them. Now, that it's also going to depend on how much does Ty Lue want to play Kevin Love at center.
Huge thing we just don't know.
If Ty Lue is like, you know what, I'm 100% comfortable keeping Love at power forward, then there's 20 plus minutes there each night for Thompson and Nance, and I think that's the way it should be. Thompson with his 23 tonight, I think that's going to be pretty much status quo. Nance, I think, is going to get a little bit more, especially when Jeff Green doesn't play center. So I think there's definitely a role. There's a lot of people that all of a sudden don't like Tristan Thompson, and if we have to choose a side, I'm team Nance, but I also think that I'm fine with starting Tristan Thompson. I think the starting job would mean more to Thompson. Nance kind of strikes me as the type of guy, and I just met him for the first time today, he's more laid back. He's more like, I'm the new guy here. I'm okay, you know, with whatever role I'm given. I kind of asked him this right before the game. I said, you know, looking at the Lakers, you spent 50% of your time at power forward, 50% of your time at center. And I said, Basketball Reference right now has you at 95% of your time at center. He kind of looked at me and he's like, that's it? Like, he couldn't think of a time that he was at power forward. And then he's like, oh yeah, in Boston, I was on the floor with Zizic a little bit. So that was kind of funny how he pulled that up.
The Croatian sensation mucking up the data points.
Right. So that was preventing Nance from being a strictly a center with this Cavs team.
So, and functionally, he's a center.
Functionally, like he's a center. He's not going to be a power forward on this team, and that's okay because I think he works well with, if you have LeBron at power forward, I think he works well if you have Kevin Love at power forward. You can't play Nance and Thompson together because neither of them has range. I think you would run into a lot of spacing problems with that. I think there's a role for both guys, and I think Thompson's going to give you more rebounding. He's got a little bit more bulk to him to guard the bigger centers in the league.
I think Thompson is a better fit with LeBron at the four because he's just going to do the rebounding. He's going to do stuff LeBron doesn't want to do, and he could theoretically allow you to play like Hood. Let's say, for example, Hood, Hill, and Korver as your other three, or like some version of the Cavs' wings that doesn't involve Jeff Green in the playoffs, right?
Right.
so you maximize the shooting there. I think Nance fits better with Love. I think like it's hard to do that binary
to have a switchable defender that
that can do some of the four jobs that, because maybe there's a game where, like, let's say it's the Warriors, right? Maybe Nance on Draymond or something like that, or in a situation where you can hide Love on Zaza is kind of the what you end up doing, and maybe that's sort of where the battle is could be. I think it'd be Thompson. I think we've seen has struggled with Draymond, for example. Yes. Or if you look at
everybody struggled with Draymond except LeBron,
because the ideal world, LeBron is defending Draymond, and they have someone else to defend KD. But that is probably not the situation we're looking at, unless it, again, Jeff Green. We're gonna take a quick break. You'll hear from Tristan Thompson, and then we're gonna cover a couple other secondary points from this game. But here's Tristan Thompson after the Cavs lost to the Spurs on Sunday.
How do you take it as a teammate when LeBron goes the entire game and gets four free throws?
Well, him only shooting three free throws, I mean, he taxes him a lot. So, it's up to the ref. It's on them to make their calls. But, I think, with him being, so strong and athletic, just because he's bigger and stronger than everyone doesn't mean he doesn't get fouled. I think he gets fouled more than anyone in this league. And he gets hit, but I think we kind of take advantage of the fact he's 280. And he's a freight train, but if a guy gets hit, he got called a foul. But that's just my personal opinion in practice. What we see, hopefully it translates to the game, but it is what it is.
Tristan, first half, San Antonio shot, I believe, around 35% from the field. Second half, they were 23 of 43. What do you feel like changed for you guys defensively?
DeJounte started making some shots. He didn't make shots in the first half. LaMarcus made about three post-up buckets on us in the third quarter. And then, you had Bryn Forbes and Danny Green, get off its rebound, kick out for the three. So they didn't really make too much shots in the first half, and the guys that were making the shots made them in the second half. So that's part of the game, but we got to limit their offensive rebounds.
Did the Spurs make an adjustment in the second half? It seemed like the first half you were all over the offensive boards and defensive glass. Did they make an adjustment at halftime to try and slow you down?
No, not at all. Had three rebounds in the third quarter, didn't play the fourth, so the three quarters. In the third quarter, I had three rebounds. No, they make an adjustment. Just didn't go my way. The ball didn't come to me as much off the offensive rebounds, but no, nothing. Defensive boards, LaMarcus was taking a lot of shots, so that puts me at a defensive rebounding position. So they didn't do nothing to slow me down. It was just the flow of the game.
What goes through your mind when you pull up the stat sheet and you see that one team is called for 24 fouls and the other one's called for 12 in a 48-minute game?
It's crazy. I think we're very aggressive. You got Ron who goes downhill. You got Jeff Green who goes downhill. You got George Hill who goes downhill. You got Jordan Clarkson who's a downhill player. So, it's very shocking to see we don't get that many free throws and that many calls for us, but that's part of the game. Some nights you're going to get them, some nights you're not. So, we can't let that dictate, our emotions and our feelings. We got to still keep playing and get back on defense.
You think it did today?
We had 11 turnovers for 22 points. So I think instead of worrying about the free throw calls, we got to worry about the turnovers leading to them buckets. That's more important. We got to cut those down.
Come on, man.
All right, is that it?
Yep.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
So there you have Tristan Thompson's comments. I think there's a little surliness to Tristan right now, and I think that's kind of interesting. First point, we're going to go to secondary here. Greg, did this game make you think the Cavs should consider any starting lineup changes? This is something I saw on Twitter. Most notably, I think Nance for Thompson is the big one, but also Rodney Hood for J.R. Smith. Did this game in particular, not your overall feelings on this, but did this game in particular make, in your mind, a strong argument for one or the other change?
I kind of did my ideal lineup about a week ago, so if we're going to ignore that, if we're just going to go off of this game, then yes, because that's how bad JR was. And JR is obviously better defensively when he is hitting shots and when he is involved. So when he goes 0 of 6 from 3, he's not giving you anything there. 1 of 8 overall. Defensively, he's better when he's hitting shots and he has that confidence. So if you were going right off this game, you'd like to say, yeah, I'd like to see a little more Rodney Hood in there. Especially Hood was kind of, he kind of disappeared in this game. You didn't notice him as much. And we were both kind of shocked to see, you know, looking at the final numbers, he played 28 minutes. He was 2 of 6, 0 of 1 from 3, finished with 6 points. You know, it makes me wonder if you have a game like this where George Hill is struggling and he's not giving you anything in terms of scoring, in terms of playmaking, you have a guy like Hood that can create his own shot. And you don't have a lot of that on this team anymore when you don't have Kyrie, you don't have Isaiah Thomas, you don't have that point guard that can go out and look to drop 20. You know, Hill's just not that guy. Hood's a guy that can give you 15 to 20 points a night, but you have to feature him in the right way. And I feel like he's kind of got lost on the bench in a couple of these games. He's kind of needed a LeBron or somebody on the court to set him up. After LeBron, you don't have a guy that's going to get you 5 to 10 assists a night.
Kevin Love could be that, by the way. I'm going to die on the Kevin Love, use him at the elbow hill.
I would love for them to use Kevin Love at the elbow.
Jordan Clarkson, I think this game, you can look at the film, it'll tell you this. And just his overall track record is not a guy that's going to find other guys. He's just not a guy that looks for shooters. I think that's one of the reasons we're going to talk about Korver, but I think it's one of the reasons Kyle Korver has sort of felt like he's disappeared is because Clarkson is not the type of guy that's going to set him up readily.
Clarkson is interested in one person scoring, and that's Jordan Clarkson.
Which is valuable. And it helped them in this game, but there's also problems with it.
And he played 23 minutes and had 0 assists. LeBron had 9. The rest of the team had, wait for it, 9.
If this was Kyrie Irving, we would be having 0 assists again. Yes. This would be like a national debate.
Yes.
This would be like Stephen A. Smith tomorrow. Your local Cleveland radio hosts would be like destroying him for this.
Larry Nance had 4 assists, which was second on the team.
All the second quarter, I think.
Yeah, it was all towards the middle of the game. I remember that. Some of that came on the fast break, which was nice. But is LeBron going to be happy with this long term when he's the only guy setting? George Hill will be a little bit better once he gets acclimated. And Kevin Love, like you said, could be used more as a playmaker. But man,
they had never done that. Why would they do that? Like, it's just hard to believe that they would do it now.
I like to say could. I like to have a little bit of optimism left. There's probably none left to be deserved that's going to happen. But on a night like this, when you play a game against a team like San Antonio that's so good defensively, that challenges shots, that gets in your face, when you don't move the ball, when you don't have a playmaker outside of LeBron to try to swing the ball around, you end up taking a lot of contested jumpers. And this is a team, I mean, DeJounte Murray is 6'5" and very long. Mm-hmm. Danny Green is a good defender. You look at this team up and down the roster, they're just lanky, good, disciplined defenders. And when you don't move the ball, when you don't have anybody besides LeBron that is interested in getting other people involved, that's going to hurt you. And I hope that gets resolved by the playoffs, but unless George Hill or Clarkson suddenly becomes this guy that's concerned with getting others involved, which I don't think they will. Maybe Hill will. This could be a problem moving forward.
Another problem moving forward. Also, real quick, I would say I would probably start Nance when Love is back, but right now I'd just say they need to get used to playing to each other.
Would Tristan get upset with that, though? Would that hurt his ego?
He's indicated that he'd be cool to come on the bench before. I think you have to maybe ask him again and see how he responds.
He said that, but how do you think he really feels?
I don't know him well enough to know. I think
he's got a lifestyle now.
Really nice Supreme hoodie. That was very expensive, I'm sure.
That was nice.
And Supreme's very nice. A lot of Supreme on the Cavs now. JR had the shooting sleeve. Clarkson had Supreme on. A lot of streetwear going on in the Cavs locker room.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see Chetty with any Supreme, though.
Had a nice beige turtleneck, though. Beige fit. Beige fit.
He looked very dapper.
And Larry Nance is with Adidas, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, him and Chetty are both Adidas guys.
Some of the few on this team,
I think,
yes.
Everyone else is like Jordan. I think Jeff Green wears Jordans and LeBron. Everyone else wears Nikes, I think.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about right. Because no longer the way of Wade's in the locker room.
Right.
J.R. Smith, real bad in this game. I gave him an F in my player grades that you can read up. It for the sword, just a disastrous game for J.R. 21 minutes for him still. I mean, just real quick, is there anything they could have done to just pull the plug on him when he has a night like this? They didn't go back to him, which I think was a good call, but I mean, what do you do to work around a bad J.R. Smith?
Oh, that's a good question.
Especially when Rodney Hood's not playing well. Is there a solution, yes or no?
Not when your other guys aren't doing great. I mean, who do you replace J.R. with? It's either Rodney Hood or Kyle Korver, and those guys were a combined 4 of 13. So you weren't getting much behind him. They kind of went away from him in the second half, which was probably the right thing to do. But, again, you didn't have a lot of other people hitting shots. And, you know, at least, you know, Korver is going to be more of a consistent defender than J.R. Smith. He's not a better defender at his peak, but he's probably more consistent. Rodney Hood is I feel like he's got that J.R. kind of streakiness in him too with his shooting and his defense.
A little less forceful with his shots, I think.
A little less forceful, you know, so far at least. J.R., I tell you, it just goes back to that first three that he was open and he passed up. I feel like that was kind of like, you know, gave you the message that something wasn't right, and certainly he didn't give you anything tonight.
Is this the end of Jedi Osman as a starter, or at least playing significant minutes? Bad night for him. It was maybe the easiest time he's had after he's defended Paul George and Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving and all these guys, defended DeJounte Murray, and picked up a lot of tacky fouls in this game, didn't shoot well, not really in a rhythm, just kind of looked like just had like a rookie game. Should this be the end for?
Well, I know you personally are going to be very disappointed if this is the end of Jedi Osman and starting lineup.
I think I'm good with it. I would.
You've
I don't
made
know
who, peace with it now. I see.
Well, I very much just this game reminded me that this is a guy that didn't play summer league.
Yes.
That, you know, he played in Turkey. He was incredible playing for the Turkish national team in Eurobasket. I think he could really use a summer where he just works with Phil Handy or other Cavs coaches or whoever, and plays in summer league and just gets to make mistakes and doesn't have the pressure of that. He can just focus on development. I think he could. I'm not saying I can't speak to that. He isn't doing that stuff and didn't do that when he was in Turkey. But I think a summer with the Cavs in Vegas playing summer league would probably do him some good.
I like Chetty. I'm not saying this is the end of him in the starting lineup. It's so interesting to see how Lou uses him defensively, because he's 6'8", yet he's normally the guy guarding the opposing point guard.
It's really interesting because he's a rookie, and you would almost never think to use, and it's not very Lou-like in a lot of ways.
No,
because we just,
it's
partially because the Cavs have not had a rookie to do something like this with, I think. I think coaching a LeBron team basically means, in a veteran team like this, basically means there's a lot of things you don't know about you as a coach. Like, I get the feeling that Ty Lue would do at least some things differently if he was coaching, like, you know, like a young Mavs team or like just a really young NBA team, right? Like the Kings. Like, I imagine he'd be doing things sort of differently, or the Suns. I think with Jetty, I don't know if you – it's hard to me what the point of it would be right now. You know, like, what's the point of starting Jeff Green? What's the point of starting Rodney Hood if those guys are going to be bench guys when Kevin Love comes back?
Right.
And that's where Kevin Love's return matters. And but I do think right now, I think very clearly once the playoff starts, Jetty goes back to being bench guy. And I think there's just limitations he has, and I think maybe you go to him certain games. Maybe you try to utilize his defensive versatility, because I think Lou does. He's thrown a lot at him.
Right.
Like, he's thrown Bradley Beal, Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, Jimmy Butler, DeJounte Murray, Kyrie Irving. He's thrown all these guys at him since he's gotten in the starting lineup. Mistakes are going to happen. This was just maybe his worst game, at least in my mind. But I think I've got a
moderately hot take with Chetty Osman. I think when Kevin Love comes back, Chetty Osman does not see the court anymore. And that's nothing against him. You know, he's been fine. He's done a good job as a hustle player. But when you look at numbers, and Ty Lue has said it before, he's not going to go over 10 guys in his rotation. And right now, he's playing 10 guys. So when Kevin Love comes back, obviously Love's going to take that spot in the starting lineup back from Chetty, which he should. But then after that, where do Chetty's minutes come from?
Because he's already getting Bogans to a degree, really. I mean, he would start, and then he wouldn't play again the first half for some of these games.
But who do you take out of that rotation? Because your only options after that are Kyle Korver, if he's not hitting shots, or Jeff Green. Those are the only two that I could see him potentially removing. I don't think he's going to bounce JR from the rotation. Maybe he deserves
it. Not this year,
at
least.
No, not this year. And I think he's going to keep both the centers in Thompson and Nance. And we know Ty Lue is a huge Jeff Green fan, going back to his days in Boston. We saw it tonight getting major minutes.
And in kind of understanding that, Jetty doesn't have an identity as a player yet. Kyle Korver and Jeff Green do.
They do.
They have identities. That works against Jetty.
And who are you going to go with in the playoffs? Who are you going to trust? You're going to trust your veteran. And is Chetty, does he do a lot of things that Kyle Korver or Jeff Green or these guys can't do? Yes. And he's got the fresh legs. He can defend point guards. When he defends those point guards, automatically, if he's contesting a shot, they miss, they get the rebound, he's already at half court, you know, running the fast break. So he does a lot of good things, but I don't see who gets benched ahead of him. So I think when Kevin Love comes back, he's going to roll with those 10, and I think Chetty's going to end up watching for the rest of the year.
Summer League Jetty.
Summer League
Jetty. Hashtag Summer League Jetty. I agree with that. I think it makes the most – I just think it'll make sense. I think maybe he plays once Love is if he's eased back, but I think come playoffs especially, I think he's out of the rotation. Last thing, we'll do a quick hit on Kyle Korver here. What – Kyle Korver just hasn't, I think, looked comfortable since the new guys come in. Maybe the one calf who hasn't, you know, reaped some sort of obvious benefit from this, at least the most notable one to me. Is there a way they can get him going? Is there a way they can I think playing with LeBron is something I would like to see more of. I think it's just that's the best way to maximize that guy. But I think there are definitely going to be limitations. He's at the point where he's not really going to be a great on-ball defender anymore. I think he rebounds well. I think, you know, I think even in this game we had a moment where he does this little run, this kind of chug when he gets his feet up to get to the corner and LeBron him with a pass, and he just guffed it and it led to points the other end for the Spurs. He just looks out of rhythm right now. I think playing with LeBron would go a long way, but that requires some readjustments. But I think that's, to me, that's what I would do. Get him, run some sets for him, run just a couple pin downs and some action for him to get open and get a corner threes. That's what I would do for Kyle Korver.
Well, we've seen how good Korver can be when he's utilized correctly.
He was like the non-LeBron category.
Yes.
He was maybe the second or third most consistent calf outside of LeBron.
You look at the plus-minus, you look at the on-off, Korver is sky-high in all those. All the Cavs' best lineups have Kyle Korver in them, but they also have LeBron James because you need someone to get Kyle Korver the ball. Jordan Clarkson, as we touched on, is not interested in getting other people the ball. He's the microwave player off the bench that's going to score. He's going to go court to court. He's going to hit threes. But he's not going to give you a lot of assists a game. And that's okay. But who gets him the ball if it's not LeBron? When I was filling out kind of my perfect rotation, I was so tempted to put Kyle Korver as the starting shooting guard on this team. Now, even that, if that's right now, even if that's only 15 minutes a game, and I know there's defensive limitations there, but the fact that he would be guaranteed to get the first 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes a game with LeBron James, where all his job is to stand and shoot, to come off screens, to come off the pin downs, where you have that spacing for LeBron, and LeBron is so good at finding him, is Kyle Korver the best shooting guard on this team? No. But would he be the best fit in the starting lineup? He might be, just because of the skill set he brings to the table.
I like it in the short term. I like it against most opponents, but I think about what the long term, the teams that the Cavs are going to face to get to the finals and in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's a non-starter against the Rockets. That is a non-starter against the Warriors.
Right.
That is a non-starter against the Celtics.
And
that is a non-starter against the Raptors, because that is putting him, like, maybe you can... That is either a non-starter because he cannot, for the life of him, defend DeMar DeRozan,
right,
or it's asking LeBron to just defend DeRozan from the start. And the Cavs have never, to this point, been like, we're going to ask LeBron to be our stopper.
No.
They just don't do that.
No, not, especially not in the postseason.
Exactly. He has too much other stuff to do. That's why Paul George would be perfect and solve all this team's problems.
Well, yeah.
We're not going to talk about that.
That ship has sailed by now.
Yeah, but that's the fix.
For the record, I put Rodney Hood as my ideal starting shooting guard long term.
Yeah.
Because he's 25, he's 6'8". If you can get him as your starting, I mean, J.R. Smith does not have a future as the starting shooting guard of this team, with or without LeBron James. Rodney Hood does. So, for the record, I put Hood as my starter, but I considered Korver just because of the guaranteed minutes with LeBron, the fact that he kind of fits well with that starting lineup. Now, like you said, the defensive limitations and who he'd have to guard in the playoffs is a little terrifying.
It's against the elite of the elite teams. And
right.
This is something that maybe like five years ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe it works a little bit. Like the Heat had a lot of specialists.
Right.
And the Cavs happen to be in this one in the same case, but it for a variety of reasons, it's not as effective.
And if you're not going to start Korver, you have to find a role for him in a lineup with LeBron. You have to have LeBron to get him the ball. I would love to see more lineups with LeBron, Nance, and Korver. And I would run pick and roll all freaking day, because the gravity that Larry Nance draws when he does the high pick and roll, because all of a sudden you got defenders that are like, am I going to get dunked on? What the heck is LeBron going to do? And then you have Korver out on the wing. That to me is like a perfect three-man combination that you just simplify your offense. You put another big out there to rebound. You can put another shooter out there. That to me is a really good lineup. And if you want to maximize Korver and not see him go 2-for-7 like he did tonight, you need to play him with LeBron James more, or else he's going to get lost in this offense.
If the Cavs were going to go full shooter, I think Hood would make sense there.
Yeah.
I think Hill as a point guard makes the most sense there. Clarkson could if Lee. If he's going to defer to LeBron more in those situations, I think that could be it. I think you have to live in some of what he's going to attack. But I agree. I think Korver with LeBron and I think with Nance could be a really good base trio to kind of start things off. Any parting shots, Greg? Any kind of last stray observation from this game we didn't hit on that you want to make sure you get out there and for our listeners?
The one takeaway I have from this game is we need Kevin Love back. We need somebody else that you can just give the ball to and expect them to go to work, because I feel like this game, when you play a good defensive team, a team that, you know, can for the most part slows it down, but they can push when they play their younger lineup.
And the Cavs, when they were under control and pushing, had a lot
very
of success.
Good. Very
Kyle
good.
Anderson's very slow in person. Just want to point that out.
He's like one of the slowest players
I know,
I've
but
ever
it's
seen.
Just like jarring when you see it in person.
Yeah. For a guy that looks like he should be athletic. Anyways, it kind of hurts that you don't have that other guy that can create their shot. This is kind of why I push for like a Kemba Walker or a CJ McCollum at the trade deadline.
And I think we're going to hear that chatter. Nets pick come the summer if
right.
they keep this base group together. Nets
so
pick plus stuff.
This is a game where you needed Kevin Love back, and you know, good news, you're going to get him in a couple weeks. So other than that, I thought that, you know, there was a lot of good things. Obviously, if your backcourt hits more than two shots, you're probably a little bit better. But overall, I mean, you're playing a team that has had the same head coach for 20-some years, and you've had the same lineup for 5 games.
Yeah.
So in the end, it's not surprising that they lost. There's a lot of good things you could take away. But yeah, if you would have made your freaking shots, it would have turned out to be a different game for him.
I agree with that. The thing I'll just note, it's not related to the game itself. I think it's very cool that Larry Nance is now wearing number 22.
Yes.
I think that's
really
cool.
First game wearing number 22.
I feel really crappy for the people that already bought Larry Nance 24 jerseys.
They're doing a refund.
Okay.
You can
it's
do
like
that.
The Wigan. This is like the Wigan situation.
This is like the Wigan situation. Everybody went out and bought their Cavs, Andrew. But why not keep that jersey? That's vintage now. That's going to be worth a lot of money someday.
Yeah, that's something. It's a shout out to my Ohio University listeners that go to Fest. That is a jersey you will see at a Fest, because people wear like random old jerseys.
There you go.
Yeah. This is the end of Locked On Cavs. Greg, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Find Greg on Twitter at CavsGregBR. I'll be back tomorrow with a mailbag show, a bonus kind of Monday show. This will be up Sunday night. We'll get that mailbag show tomorrow. You can still submit questions right now to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com to have them answered by me. If you want to support the podcast, give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CDBamWrites. Find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you again tomorrow and all this week. Your daily look at LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Never dull, always interesting.